Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Outgrow's Technologist of the Month. I'm your host, Dr. Saksham Sharda. I'm the creative director at Outgrow.co. And for this month, we're going to interview Vishal Shah, who's the GM of XR and Metaverse at Lenovo. Thanks for joining us, Vishal.
Hey, Saksham, thank you very much. And I really appreciate being on your podcast. Big fan of what you do and what you do for the tech industry in general. So thank you very much for having me.
All right, so Vishal, we're going to start with a rapid fire round just to break the ice. You get three passes. In case you don't want to answer the question, you can just say pass, but try to keep your answers to one word or one sentence only, okay?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right, so the first one is, at what age do you want to retire?
Never.
How long does it take you to get ready in the mornings?
15 minutes.
Most embarrassing moment of your life?
My kids should answer that, not me, because that happens almost every day.
Favorite color?
I would say blue.
What time of day are you most inspired?
I start my days early, 5 a.m.
How many hours of sleep can you survive on?
Probably around five hours a day.
Fill in the blank. An upcoming technology trend is blank.
I would say XR plus AI is the next gen of computing.
All right. The city in which the best kiss of your life happened?
I would have to say Hawaii. I would say Maui.
How do you relax?
Going on hikes.
How many cups of coffee do you drink per day?
Too many.
A habit of yours that you hate?
I would say Netflix binging on the weekends.
That's good. The most valuable skill you've learned in life?
Being resilient and always being resilient, I would say.
Okay. The biggest mistake of your career?
Not taking risks early on in my career.
Your favorite Netflix show?
I would have to say Stranger Things.
One word description of your leadership style?
Inclusive and always sharing and being a constant communicator.
Top priority in your daily schedule?
Meeting customer commitments and making sure that my team is heard and taken care of.
Ideal vacation spot for relaxation?
Anywhere close to the beach.
And the last one is, key factor for maintaining a work-life balance?
Prioritize family and friends.
Okay, one bonus one then. What is one advice you would give job seekers in the current market?
Use your network. That's the most important thing.
All right, so that's the end of the rapid fire. Is there any rapid fire question you want to elaborate on more, or you think you're good?
I think we're good.
All right, so we can go into the long form questions for which you can take as much time and thought and anything you like. The first question is, how do you envision the future of XR and metaverse technologies shaping consumer electronics and mobile products in the next decade?
At Think Reality, we are focused largely on the enterprise side of things. You know, we're working with large enterprise customers to help with worker safety, with training and development, with collaboration. But when it comes to the consumer side, you know, we're already seeing a foray right now into gaming, as well as AI-based, augmented reality glasses that help you in your daily life. So whether it's consumer or enterprise, we feel that the overall market, as the technology evolves, as chipsets get more efficient, will obviously make these devices more palatable. You're going to be able to wear them just like my glasses right now for much longer periods of time. We're going to see the same evolution happen in the VR glasses as well as we move to mixed reality, right? But in terms of traction and ROI, we are seeing a lot of that happen more on the enterprise side first, in terms of very tangible ROI that our enterprise customers are getting, you know, B2B and then eventually B2B2C as well.
And are there any potential challenges or obstacles that these technologies may encounter in becoming mainstream components of consumer electronics or just mainstream in general?
Yeah, I think just like any technology curve, right? It's about the solutions, it's about the content, and then it's about eventually the hardware getting to a point where you can actually wear these devices for long periods of time, right? So we've already seen huge jumps in the hardware as we look at more and more of these new designs. If you look at our latest Think Reality VRX, we are using the pancake lenses, which reduces the thickness by almost one third. We have a lot more comfortable designs that lets these workers use these for one-hour training sessions or any kind of remote assistance work. But a lot more needs to be done if these devices were to be used for entire, you know, shifts, for example, right? For an eight-hour shift or for a complete movie. You know, they have to get a lot more efficient. They have to get a lot lighter. And the battery life has to improve significantly as well. And you know, hardware is just one problem. It's also the killer use cases, whether it's on the enterprise side or the consumer side. I think it's going to be important that the focus on key outcomes on the enterprise side, especially around learning and development, collaboration, and the remote worker area, is going to be very important to make this technology scale.
So in your opinion, what are the key factors driving the adoption of IoT and cloud software solutions in today's high-tech industry?
Yeah, the key factors that are driving this is the evolution of content, right? So if you look at the education market, K through 12 and higher ed, you know, there's no doubt that students, millennials, Gen Z, they take to this 3D spatial computing a lot more than the previous generations. So their preferred method is to think in this 3D environment. And when you teach a particular worker or a student in a 3D environment with a digital twin using some of these AR, VR technologies, you know, your retention is 400% higher, your error rates come down significantly, you know, and you can actually teach your entire class in a much more efficient manner that they recall in a lot more, right? So those ROIs are quite clear. Those outcomes are quite clear. So we're seeing a lot of excitement in that area. The other big area is around the workforce, you know, onboarding as well, right? As we see these baby boomers retire, we are losing a lot of skills in the field or on the factory floor. And how do we bring the new generation that's coming to replace these workers, how do we bring them off the bench in a safe manner and in a quick manner so that we can efficiently get them back to the factory floors or to the field? That's where AR, VR training is one of the best ways to train and onboard these employees in a more 3D format so that, hey, when you're trying to fly a plane, you don't do it, you know, you don't get in the plane directly, you get into a simulator, right? So being able to simulate these tough jobs, being able to simulate a tough environment, hard skills as well as soft skills, building that muscle memory so that when you go to the factory floor for the first time or when you interact with a customer or when a nurse goes to a particular hospital room to configure it for the first time, you're no stranger to that environment. You've actually done it in a more 3D spatial environment multiple times.
So here you mentioned auto, education, let's say travel, flights, shipbuilding or like flight building. Are there any other industries where this is seeing application?
I already mentioned education, and you know, and again, you know, just in general, research and development, right? Whether it's you know, we have a lot of companies in the healthcare space when they're looking at a particular design of a stent or working through you know, a particular molecular design. You know, we see them use AR VR technologies and collaborate across multiple industries, multiple continents to bring these together. Another interesting area is quick service restaurants, right? So you know, restaurants that serve through drive-throughs and in a very high stress environment, they tend to have very high churn rates in terms of people coming and leaving their jobs in 30 days, 90 days. So the question is, how can you, because it's a very high stress environment. So the question is, how can you train these folks so that they get on board faster, that they enjoy what they're doing? And how can you gamify the training so that they get more used to these high stress environments? So we're seeing a lot of quick service restaurants adopt this technology to make sure that their employees get trained on the latest technology, as well as you know, have the right kind of training to kind of maintain their cool in this high stress environment.
Speaking of all these applications, so as a successful GM with P&L responsibility, how do you balance innovation and profitability when developing new products and services like these?
Yeah, you know, to me, it's all about the outcomes that we focus on when it comes to innovation. You know, Lenovo has you know, one of the best track records in innovation, being a true pocket to cloud company and the number one PC player in the world. And now we're seeing this huge inflection with AI PCs and AI on the edge as well, right? So innovation is in our DNA. We, you know, in our industry, we get to partner with some of the top component makers in the world, like Qualcomm. We were their, you know, we were sometimes their lead partners on their chipset roadmap for XR. We were their lead partner on their Qualcomm's Snapdragon Spaces ecosystem as well, which really helped us build a large ecosystem as well. So I think innovation is always something that we're looking to, you know, really we lead with innovation and we lead with solutions. So I think that the other part of the innovation is it's not only about the hardware or the technology, it's about creating that ecosystem, an open ecosystem where your ISVs and solution providers can thrive and provide these end-to-end solutions to your end customers. So I think that's a key part of innovation is that business model that you create that reduces the friction to onboard these solution providers so that we can serve our customers better. And then the third part of the innovation, of course, is having a suite of services and a global reach as well, right? So Lenovo, one of the things that's in our DNA is because of our Think brand, because of our you know, because of the trust we have with the largest CIOs and enterprises in the world, you know, we have operations in more than 180 countries. We have a very diversified supply chain. So when our customers adopt a new technology like AR/VR, which is still very nascent, they know that, you know, we will be able to serve them in multiple countries. We will be able to provide them with services. We will be able to provide them with warranties and replacement in these countries. And, you know, we will have a continuous roadmap that serves them over the next 5 to 10 years as well.
So this seems like a lot of stuff on your plate. So how do you approach risk assessment and mitigation when pursuing such innovative ventures in your current role?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, every day is about risk mitigation and control, right? Especially in a new industry, in an industry that's changing, you know, by the hour sometimes in AR, VR, right? So it's kind of like the early days of AI. You know, we've been through a lot of the hype cycles, the highs and the lows. You know, there's always a challenge with component providers. There's always a challenge with, you know, the ISVs that we work with. But, you know, when it comes to risk mitigation, you know, we make sure that we have a very clear set of objectives. We have checkpoints with all our internal project leads, internal service providers, as well as external vendors. And we have a very strong cadence that is kind of, you know, it's the Lenovo approach to make sure that we provide the right kind of quality, security, and privacy, right? So one of the big things about the risk mitigation that we do is our commitment to being a pure enterprise-first company and a pure enterprise-first platform for AR/VR. Unlike some of the other players in the market who have a gaming or social media DNA, they come with that with that first, and then, oh, by the way, use this in the enterprise as well, which just doesn't work, right? Because our customers are looking for a lot more stringent standards and someone with a track record of security and privacy. So, and that is going to become extremely important, especially in the AI world, as we start integrating more and more Gen AI solutions in AR, VR, both from a content development as well as a co-pilot assistant as well.
So speaking about these innovation and emerging trends, could you discuss the potential synergies between XR technology that you talked about and emerging trends such as edge computing and decentralized finance?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, the overall promise of the metaverse, right, was the combination of XR and decentralized worlds, decentralized finance, being able to bring that together, right? So a lot of that, you know, is still evolving as we go forward. But, you know, one of the key areas that we are focused on, of course, is the XR plus edge that you talked about and XR plus AI. We just demonstrated, you know, a multi-VR solution at the NVIDIA conference, the GTC, where we demonstrated up to 4 VR headsets being powered of the same edge workstations so that you can collaborate in a 3D format on different parts of the world, right? So we're already seeing that if you want to make these devices smaller, more and more of these digital twins will have to live on the edge and be delivered to your device on demand using you know, a 5G low latency network. So edge is going to be a key part of the offloading of a lot of this, a lot of this content, a lot of this data for these devices to get more, you know, more sleek, at the same time more efficient as well. And then, the second part, of course, when it comes to these new technologies is going to be around generative AI. You know, that's going to be a huge inflection point for this industry, and it already is, especially around the ability to build content. To me, one of the biggest things that's required to scale in this industry is the availability of content. And a lot of content needs to be spatial, 3D, immersive. And that requires a lot of, it's a high budget project, right? Because you need designers, you need people with, you need studios, you need people with graphic design knowledge. And those are very expensive resources. With generative AI, we've seen that projects that used to take several months now just take several weeks, or project that took a couple of million dollars now can be done for a few hundred thousand dollars and in a fraction of the time. So generative AI is going to be a great force function for this, especially when it comes to creation of 3D worlds. We're already seeing companies do, like, you just write in a prompt and it creates a 3D world for you. We were doing speech to 3D worlds demos with our partner Engage at CES and Mobile World Congress. We just announced a partnership with Virtual Speech that integrates generative AI for dynamic training as well. So, as we go forward, this year itself, we're going to see our portfolio of solution providers move more and more towards these generative AI solutions for our end customers, both for enterprise and education.
So then addressing the key fear everyone has with AI, that it will take away jobs. So if you feel that it is doing stuff for a lesser budget and requires lesser personnel, are you reallocating these people somewhere else? What is Lenovo's strategy here?
The thing around the personnel, it's still TBD. But to me, generative AI will provide is the ability of a person to do a lot more with a lot less, right? It'll make your B player an A player, right? So I think it's that promise that's going to be very important in terms of generative AI. I think there's a famous saying that generative AI won't take your job, but if you don't know how to use generative AI, it will take your job, right? So it's the people who use generative AI efficiently that will take your job. So I think if anything, generative AI will create the next batch of engineers, the next batch of scientists, the next batch of artists as well that can use these technologies and make them more efficient. And just like any technology inflection, I think there's going to be, there's going to be some winners and losers, but it's going to still TBD to see how fast that transition takes place.
All right. So we have a bonus question, which is usually to, again, humanize you as a speaker, which is tell us more about what your typical day looks like. You wake up in the morning, and what is your schedule at Lenovo?
Yeah, I generally start my day early in the morning because I have a lot of calls with Europe and Asia, and try to pull in after those initial calls. Try to create some, make some lunch for my kids, send them to school, and then back to the grind. Try to fit in a brief hike or a workout in the day, and then evenings with the family, and then after they're in bed, back to some calls with some Asian countries as well. So it's a pretty long day, grinding day. A lot of times I'm on the road, love meeting my customers, love meeting my team, love meeting our suppliers. Nothing energizes me more than that. So I think I'm on the road quite a bit. That's just the nature of the job. So I think being in a global company like Lenovo with a global customer base, that's always exciting. It's exhausting, but it's also very something that's endearing to me as well.
So besides the two events you mentioned, CES and Mobile World Congress, are there any other events where people can catch you at?
Yeah, we do numerous events across throughout the year that we are as part of Lenovo. We just got off a very successful NVIDIA GTC. We have the Augmented World Expo coming up in Long Beach. And then we have the AES show, which is a very enterprise-centric show in Houston towards the end of the year as well. And throughout the year, we do almost several events a month, because we try to make sure that we're in a lot of these vertical events, like education events in Europe, a lot of construction events, a lot of vertical events, like we're going to be at the Autodesk show as well, showcasing our 3D digital twin capabilities for architectures and engineers. So, we have a pretty busy schedule. Follow us on LinkedIn. We make sure that we post what shows we're going to be at. Actually, right now we're at Laval Virtual, pretty close to your neck of the woods in France. So it's we try to be with our ISVs. We try to invite our solution providers to be at our booth, or we go and support them in their booth as well. So that's part of the thing that we do as Lenovo, is we really evangelize our ISV ecosystem and make sure that they get the attention with our end customers as well.
So in all this hectic schedule, how do you approach product planning and roadmap development to ensure alignment with market trends and customer needs?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that is central to the success of our organization, right? The product planning aligning with our marketing team, the marketing research. So we've built a good team. We are on our fourth generation of products, we're Think Reality right now, and we are the only company in the world that is successfully doing true six-DOF AR and VR headsets, the only enterprise company that's doing that. So, we've actually developed a lot of internal skills, internal assets, internal IP that helps us be very lean, but at the same time, be at the cutting edge of the market as well. So we have a lot of firsts in this market. Like, we were the first to, be on the Snapdragon Spaces ecosystem, which really helped us have hundreds of ISVs that can now be on the Think Reality glasses. So innovation and the product development is a key part. The other part of product development and innovation is having great partners and great partnerships. So, we have great partnerships with companies like Qualcomm that help us stay on the cutting edge of the chipset platforms as well, right? We have great partnerships with our supply chain. We do the manufacturing ourselves at the Lenovo factory, which helps us really control nuances in the supply chain and make sure that there's no disruption. And then, of course, like I said, our software ecosystem and partnerships there are key to them, like making sure that they keep raising the envelope for us as well. So having that feedback loop is super important in our product planning and product cycle as well.
So you mentioned earlier that the industry moves at a breakneck pace. So can you discuss any instances where you had to pivot or adapt your product roadmap based on evolving market dynamics or competitive pressures, or any story that comes to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think one example would be, there was a lot of pressure for us to stay in the, for example, the 3DOF VR market, right? So, when we started doing some planning about 2 years ago, we said, hey, you know what, do we still want to serve the low tier, still high volume 3DOF market, which is primarily like 3D videos, right? But we clearly saw the trend where a lot of the content development, tools were quickly moving towards 6DOF and more interactive, immersive content as opposed to 3DOF, right? So we made the decision to like serve that 6DOF end of the market, which is the mid-tier to high-tier end of the market, right? So, I think we made that pivot. We decided to launch our own product, the Think Reality VRX. We made some choices to make sure that we have the best color pass-through in the industry as well. So we were much ahead of our competition in terms of having really good quality pass through using two cameras. So we made those pivots and were able to launch a very successful product, which has gotten a lot of industry accolades and is now being used by a lot of different industry verticals, making that pivot as well.
So in all this, how do you prioritize and allocate resources effectively to support the development and launch of new products and services in these dynamic market environments?
I think the most important thing is having a clear strategy, having a clear set of focus and priorities, and then simplifying your portfolio to the extent that you can, right? I think a lot of times you will find people trying to do too much and be too spread out. I think our strategy has been to focus on the enterprise and create an enterprise-friendly device from the ground up, as opposed to being all things gaming or all things social media or all things consumer and trying to, use this in the enterprise space as well. So having that enterprise focus has helped us develop a product that is secure, that is trusted, that is comfortable for people to use, that has features like, being able to change the faceplate because you want to use it across multiple employees in a particular day, right? So if you look at some of the other products in the market, it's the fitting, the sizing takes just way too long, right? But in our case, you got you know, three shift workers using these devices at three different time points. How do you make it swappable? How do you make it wipeable? And how do you make it easy to for them to adapt to it right away, right? So there's we make sure that it's very enterprise friendly and flexible as well. So making those trade-offs early, making that design changes early and those design decisions is what is key to being successful. And then, like I said, you know, having the right partners, making sure we have the right checkpoints with them has been, you know, the key to our success.
So there's a special question from our audience. What skills are most in demand in your industries and how can people acquire them, job seekers acquire them?
I would say in our industry, you know, UI, UX design is still, you know, king, right? I mean, how you design these products, how do we integrate them with the latest technologies is very important. The second big part is going to be just, you know, the general, I wouldn't say this first or second, but I think I would say these are the top two or three. The second big one is around content development and creating these end-to-end solutions by vertical, right? So we see a lot of these successful ISVs that we work with. They have kind of created one niche, you know, one particular vertical or one particular set of industries that they provide training solutions for or remote assistance solutions for or learning and development opportunities, right? So those are the companies that are very successful. And that's where I think some of these content development and solution development skills are going to be very important. The third is going to be the ability to be a solution architect and look at the big picture. Like you said, right? I mean, XR is not a technology that can be successful on its own. It's going to be connected to the edge. It's going to need a lot of generative AI on the device as well as off the device, you know, on device as well as off device. How do you put these pieces together, right? So I think that's something that we do as technologists, that we do as when we do plan our portfolio, is how do we bring all these partnerships together, being able to partner, being able to put this whole picture together with a variety of resources, with a variety of large scale platform providers is a key asset in this industry or any new industry for that matter.
Speaking of then the potential of XR, what are your thoughts on the potential of XR technologies to create new forms of digital art, entertainment, and social interaction?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be groundbreaking, right? I mean, we're already seeing people create virtual worlds, people interact in these virtual worlds, being able to design different content, multiple people being able to design content on platforms like Omniverse, you know, using Edge platforms. So the ability to create this content, being able to use controllers to create some of this content, being able to use multimodal input is going to be quite groundbreaking as well. And then the ability to just take your laptop and make it a 3D spatial space as well, right? Being able to like convert your 2D calls to 3D calls or a 2D interaction into you can share a 3D design with me and then we can both put on our glasses and convert this into a 3D collaboration session, right? So being able to have those spatial collaboration sessions is going to be key as well as we go forward.
So then how can businesses and organizations navigate what I assume are going to be legal and ethical implications of XR technologies, particularly in areas such as intellectual property and user-generated content?
Yeah, I mean, so for us, we make sure that our devices are absolutely secure. We have the privacy that is needed. But when it comes to some of these generative AI tools that people are using, right? So they have to be careful that the backend platform that they use is secure. That's why working with some of the partners that we work with, they use some of the standard, Gen AI platforms that we know are, open source or that we know have the right kind of ethics around them, right? So, but that's always a challenge with any new technology is how do you strike that balance? And as we move forward, we're seeing more and more of these discussions and a lot of, a lot of cadence that we put in terms of the partners that we use. That we approve to make sure that they're following some of these strict guidelines as well, especially around security and privacy, which I think is going to be a big factor in Gen AI.
And are there any notable instances where legal or ethical issues related to XR technologies have arisen in the past? And how are they resolved?
Yeah, nothing that comes to my mind right away, you know, because XR is slightly different from Gen AI. I mean, XR is being used more for, you know, in our industry, more for very specific use cases around training, learning and development or collaboration, right? So it's a very controlled environment where you're using your own digital twin, you're using your own learning modules. So it's not like where you're stealing somebody else's content, or you know, unlike some other technologies where you can actually do a text to image search or something, right? Or text to image creation, where there have been some instances in the Gen AI industry where people are challenging or they have to license the technology. So in our case too, if you wanted to do that, you would have the system provider or the solution provider would have to do that as well, right? Make sure that they're following these guidelines before they actually come on our platform.
And how immersive do you think XR is going to get? Because what role do you believe haptic feedback and other sensory technologies will play in creating more and more immersive XR realistic experiences?
Yeah, so I think from a visual perspective, you know, XR is as immersive as it gets, right? We believe in true sixth-off XR, our VR device, our AR device. They don't pretend to be spatial devices. They're true spatial 360 devices. So that's one way we differentiate ourselves. Now, when it comes to multimodal input and multimodal experiences, like you talk about, like haptics and controllers and gestures and voice, you know, we are open to all those technologies. You know, we provide the right kind of sensors, the inside-out cameras that will enable these. Actually, we were just talking to a ultrasound haptics provider yesterday. You know, we did some ultrasound haptics demos at our CES as well, where you have a heart in front of you or an object in front of you, and you put your hands out and you can actually feel and interact with it when you move it, right? It actually gives you a feeling that you're touching something, or you can give somebody a high five. So those technologies already exist. You know, can they scale fast enough? That's the big question. Can you bring the prices down? So I think that will come around, but there's still a lot of work to be done in that area. And as the demand for these devices grow, I think you'll see them scale as well.
In what areas would you see the application of this at present?
A lot of applications around, you know, for haptics, it's sort of being able to get a feeling for training, number one, right? The mm-hmm. actual real feel. The second one that it was interesting that we were talking to somebody is more around human interaction and human collaboration, you know, having your grandma on the other hand, and then being able to touch, have this touch feeling, or, so those kind of the things are pretty common. A lot of things around could potentially be done around retail as well, retail experiences and point of sale devices, where you get a feeling for touching something, or you just swipe over a particular pad and you can actually buy something. So those are the kind of experiences that will be enabled through some of these haptic technologies. We're seeing a lot of these haptic technologies being used in cars as well, so that you don't have to like touch the touchpad, and instead you are kind of, you know, still looking, keeping your eyes on the road and being able to interact with the screen.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. All right, so the last question for you is of a personal kind. What would you be doing in your life if not this?
Ooh, I would probably be a professional golfer. You know, I missed that boat when I was, when I had the chance in my early 20s. But yeah, that would be the second dream job.
Well, hopefully then in the future, after your retirement, I shall be interviewing you for Golfer of the Month instead of Marketer and Technologist of the Month.
The senior golfer of the month, yes.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us for this month's episode of Outgrow's Technologist of the Month. That was Vishal. Thanks for joining us, Vishal.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thanks.
Check out their website for more details, and we'll see you once again next month.